Welcome to the International Brotherhood of Freemasons podcast, a Masonic podcast that brings you education pieces from a wide array of authors throughout the English, Spanish, and French-speaking regions of the world. International Brotherhood of Freemasons, in no way, reflects the views of any Masonic lodge or Grand Lodge and is the sole opinion of the person expressing it. And now, your host, Brother Paul Haynes.
When I chose to do the first episode on Freemasonry, what is Freemasonry, I knew it would be a long episode. Of course, the topic of what is Freemasonry, there's been volumes and volumes written on it. We could talk about it all day. But I wanted to make sure that I included different sources and as much information as possible. And not only did it turn into a long, very, very long episode, I ended up deciding to split it into two episodes because it was so long. But any of you who are Freemasons, you can understand what a wide topic this is. And those of you who are not may not have a lot of information about Freemasonry, or you may have heard some things that you're not sure is accurate. So I wanted to dedicate plenty of time to this topic. I was on a Masonic website once and read a comic that about a man who was walking down Main Street, and he came into this shop and he asked the clerk, he says, "That building across the street there, what is that?" And the clerk answered, "Why, that's the Masons. That's their building there." He said, "Oh, so are you a Mason?" "Oh, no, no," the clerk said. That's a very exclusive organization. He said, "In fact, look, you look over there, you'll see a man with a sword outside the door there. He's been knocking on that door for 6 months, and they still haven't let him in." So it's kind of funny. Some things you may see going on or hear and may not understand. So that's why I wanted to use as much time as I felt necessary to talk about this topic.
This next piece is simply entitled, "What is Freemasonry?" It was written by Worshipful Brother George William Speth on the 25th of March in 1893. It was originally a pamphlet, and I found it on the Grand Lodge of British Columbia and Yukon's website. It begins, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here this evening to afford you some information upon Freemasonry, a matter which is not generally understood by the outside world and not always even by the members of the craft." De Quincey, in his essay upon secret societies, tells the following tale. "I once heard of a poor fellow complain that, being a Freemason, he had been led the life of a dog by his wife, as if he were Samson and she were Delilah, with the purpose of forcing him to betray the Masonic secret and sign. And these, he solemnly protested to us all, he had betrayed most faithfully and regularly whenever he happened to be drunk. But what did he get for his goodness? All the return he ever had for his kindness was this invariable treachery was a word too common. I regret to say in female lips, fiddle-dee-dee. He declared with tears in his eyes that peace for him was out of the question until he could find out some plausible falsehood that might prove more satisfactory to his wife's mind than the truth. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as I do really intend to tell you the truth and nothing but the truth, but not quite all the truth, I trust my tale will receive more credit at your hands than was accorded to De Quincey's unfortunate friend. Many people have many ideas as to Freemasonry, and as these are generally all wrong, let me begin by shortly stating what Freemasonry is not, after which we will consider what it is. What Freemasonry is not. Many think the society is a huge benefit society like the Foresters, Oddfellows, Druids, Antediluvian Buffaloes, and others, only frequented by men of a somewhat higher social status. In these societies, a member pays certain fees or dues and is legally entitled to claim in return certain benefits of a pecuniary nature. Freemasonry is empathetically not a benefit society. No Mason can claim as his right, in return for the heavy initiation fees, yearly subscriptions, and constant contributions to charities, any return whatsoever. And yet our charities are the finest and most prominent in the world. Our boys' school educates and clothes 250 orphans. Our girls' school affects the same purpose for 250 of the other sex. The asylum provides for and grants annuities to some 400 old Masons and their widows. And the Board of Benevolence disperses monthly about £1,200, in sums ranging from £5 to £200. As a general rule, the Masons of England volunteer the absence of bitterness which so distinguishes our English politics, and the glorious, steadfast, and persistent, though tentative and deliberate march of English reform, reluctant to forget, but unwilling to learn, have probably not a little to the spirit of the English Freemasonry inculcated in our lodges. Freemasonry is not a religion. It admits men of all religions. The District Deputy Grand Master of Burma lately wrote to me from Rangoon, "I have just initiated Muang Ban Om, a Burman who has so far modified his religious belief as to acknowledge the existence of a personal God. The worshipful master was a Parsi, one warden a Hindu or Brahmin, the other an English Christian, and the deacon a Mohammedan. But Freemasonry, although teaching no religion of its own, is the handmaid of all religions, and calculated to make every member a more sincere follower of the particular religion he professes. The candidate must be a believer in God. With his initiation commences his Masonic instruction, and he is taught that God is all Father, all Creator, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, absolutely pure and good, of impartial justice and inexhaustible loving kindness, the giver of all gifts, the preserver from all evil. He is also taught that there is a life to come in which he will meet with punishment or reward according to his deserts. Any further dogma we leave to the teachers of the churches. We assert none, we convert none. Word of thought, and a dislike to change for change's sake.
The rivers clap their hands.
This explanation of our tenets will also dispose of another accusation, that we are infidels and atheists. We are neither one nor the other, although the Pope stoutly affirms we are both. But then he knows nothing about it himself, and like De Quincey's friend's wife, he will not believe those who do. In India, the natives call the lodge the Shaitan Bungalow, which means the devil's house. They evidently share the opinion of the Pope. Again, we are not a trades organization, as our name would imply, and we are the direct lineal descendants of the grandest corporation of artisans which has ever existed, those glorious Freemasons who built all our old cathedrals, churches, palaces, and castles. But perhaps no accusation was ever more persistently launched against us than that we were a mere convivial society, a dining club, eating and drinking more than is good for us, and the accusation is of very ancient date. Hogarth, himself a Mason, in his print of London by Night, shows us two drunken Freemasons reeling home. In 1723, a funny little book appeared entitled Ebrietatis Encomium, or The Praise of Drunkenness, in which the author attempts to show that it is a laudable and wholesome custom to get drunk occasionally in good society, on good liquor, as confirmed by the examples of popes, bishops, philosophers, Freemasons, and other men of learning in all ages. On another page, he announces Freemasons and their learned men who, having wearied themselves with important studies, have taken to this diversion, shall also appear on the stage. And he keeps his promise, for chapter 15 is devoted to Freemasons and other learned men who used to get drunk. And he then goes on to say, I do assure my readers, they are very great friends to the vintners. An eyewitness to this was I myself at their late general meeting at Stationers Hall. We had a good dinner, and to their eternal honor, the brotherhood laid about them very valiantly. They saw them, their high dignity, they saw what they were, acted accordingly, and showed themselves men. The Westphalia hams and chickens, with good plum pudding, not forgetting the delicious salmon, were plentifully sacrificed with copious libations of wine for the consolation of the brotherhood. The bottle in the meanwhile went merrily about, and the healths were begun by a great man, which were unanimously pledged in bumpers, attended with loud huzzas. The faces then of the most ancient and most honorable fraternity of Freemasons brightened with ruddy fires, their eyes illuminated, resplendent, blazed. Welfare, ye merry hearts, thought I. Hail, ye illustrious topers, if liberty and freedom, ye free mortals, is your essential difference. It richly distinguishes you from all others and is indeed the very soul and spirit of your brotherhood. I know not who may be your alma mater, but undoubtedly Bacchus, your Liber Pater. This wine, ye Masons, makes you free. Bacchus the Father is liberty. I might multiply such good-humored extracts from old books and viler accusations spitefully made by more modern writers. And I do not care to deny that 150 years ago, Freemasons probably did occasionally dine, not wisely, but too well. And if so, they did no more than anyone else was doing at that period. But how do we stand now? Most lodges dine but once a year, at other times content themselves with a biscuit and a glass of wine. A Mason pays from 5 to 10 guineas for initiation and from 2 to 6 guineas yearly subscription. If he joins for the sake of the one good dinner in the year, he probably pays very highly for it. A dining club could be worked more cheaply, and moreover, moderation in all things is a cardinal virtue with us, and intemperance a Masonic sin. And Masons now dine both well and wisely, and why should they not? It is very well for a man with a torpid liver, an impaired digestion, a bilious temperament, or worst of all, an empty purse to sneer at a good dinner. But for my part, I am not ashamed to stand here before you all and confess that I like it. 99 out of 100 of us like a good dinner, and so do the Masons. I never refuse a good dinner on principle. I do not know how long my health or my means will permit me to enjoy one, but the dinners are not the soul of Masonry, and the proof is that the majority of lodges dine but once a year. And if the Margate Masons dine well once a year, remember, they like their poorer neighbors to do so also, and every winter provide a splendid dinner, tea, and entertainment for some 250 old men and women, residents in the town. That wine is no necessity to our proceedings is demonstrated by the fact that there are many teetotal lodges where no wine is allowed, and in every lodge will be found some total abstainers dependent upon it. Dinner is a grand institution. Most of us like one a day. Whether it be good or bad is a question of degree, not of principle. And I prefer it good when I can get it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I come to the most astonishing negation of all. Freemasonry is not a secret society. The Pope says it is, and nearly every Pope from Clement the 12th in 1737 onwards has therefore excommunicated us. But I hope to show you that His Holiness is wrong again. Secret societies are of two kinds, those whose members remain unknown and those who conceal their purpose and aims, their means of action, and the time and place of their meetings. The greatest secret society on Earth is the Society of the Jesuits. A large majority of their members are not known even to each other, and their actions are often not known to the Pope, but only to their general who holds all the threads in his hands. I wish to throw no stone at them. Masonry has taught me to hope for righteous intentions everywhere. I am merely stating a well-known truth, and therefore ill becomes the Pope, in one of the same breath, to curse the craft and bless the followers of Ignatius Loyola. Now, the Freemasons answer to none of the requirements of a secret society. They are known to their neighbors. You never heard of a Freemason concealing the fact of his membership. And every lodge, once a year, sends to the clerk of the peace a complete and full list of its members. Their aims and objects are no secret. You shall hear what these are presently. Their principles have been printed over and over again, and their doors are never closed to a properly qualified candidate. How can they be a secret society? Does the head of the detective force suspect them of mediating crime? He has only to apply for admission, become a Mason, and satisfy himself. Does the government surmise treason in the lodge? Let the prime minister come and see. Does the Archbishop of Canterbury imagine we are undermining the establishment? Or the Pope fear that we are combating the doctrine of infallibility? Or the mayor fancy we are unsound on the drainage question? Let them all come. They will be welcome. His grace, his holiness, his worship may make themselves equally free of our mysteries, provided they are good men and true. They will simply learn that whatever our private opinions, we never bother our heads about such matters in lodge. No, Masonry is no secret society, but it possesses secrets of its own, which is quite another thing. Secrets, aye, there's the rub. What are these secrets? What is what everyone wants to know, especially the ladies? In Ireland last century, Miss St. Leger, afterwards the Honorable Mrs. Aldworth, wanted to know and hid herself in the clock case, so it is said, of the lodge room of her brother's house. But she was discovered and had to undergo the ordeal of being made a Freemason before they would let her go. And a very good Mason she remained to the end of her life. Think of that, ye ladies of enterprise, what examples to follow. But we are more careful nowadays. You would surely be discovered in time before the commencement of ceremonies. When the Prince of Wales was installed Grand Master at Albert Hall, I remember that two of the barmaids hid themselves on the glass roof, but the stewards hunted them out and politely conducted them off the premises a full hour before Grand Lodge assembled. They also wanted to know, but were disappointed. Mrs. Caudle wanted to know what the brute of a Caudle went to sleep or pretended to and would not tell her. De Quincey's friend's wife wanted to know and would not believe the truth when she heard it. Now, I personally, ladies and gentlemen, am the soul of candor, but even I am not going to tell you, and I trust you will not be too much disappointed. Our secrets are our own, and will remain so to the end of the chapter. But I will tell you this much. If you knew them, they would be of no use whatsoever to you, though of great service to us. If our secrets could be of the slightest benefit to mankind in general, we should have made them public long ago. And now,
what is Freemasonry? It is a society of men of all classes, in the social scale of all nations, races, colors, and creeds. They must be believers in one sole personal God. Further of good position, for example, following some reputable calling, a user, a police informer, the following of any degrading occupation, even though perfectly legal, such as a hangman, would be an impossible candidate, because his presence would dishonor the craft, and he would be unfit to associate with gentlemen. They must be of adequate means, that is, their income must be in excess of their actual necessities. Freemasonry is always more or less expensive, and we hold it a Masonic crime to devote to the craft what is required by one's family. They must be of good repute or morals. This does not imply that every candidate shall be absolutely faultless, but what is known of him must be on the whole to his credit. The man of business whose smartness borders on dishonesty, the boon companion whose conviviality resolves itself into frequent excess, the man who is often seen in doubtful company, the hot-headed disputant whose violence of temperament leads him to forget the respect due to his adversary. These are not desirable members of the craft, even though their good qualities exceed their bad ones. And yet, if carelessly admitted, there is a likelihood that the craft and its lessons may do them great good. On the other hand, the inveterate liar, the unclean liver, the drunkard, the rowdy, the companion of rogues and vagabonds, the fraudulent bankrupt, the gambler, the spendthrift, the betrayer of innocence, the hypocrite, and the stingy are under no circumstances fit and proper candidates for the privileges of Freemasonry. They must be free. When Masonry was first established, serfs and villains existed in the land. Such were not admitted to apprenticeship in our lodges. In like manner, we must not admit a man who is not master of his own time and actions, but we apply the restriction to his intellect also. A man bound down in the chains of superstition, unable to take a free and manly view of matters in general, the bondsman of priestcraft, of social laws and prejudices, of his business avocations even, or a slave to his own passions, is not an associate for free men and Masons. They must be sound men. When Masonry was chiefly composed of operative Masons, a cripple was not admitted to apprenticeship. The reason is obvious. We no longer insist upon soundness of limb, provided the candidate can fulfill our requirements, but we stipulate for mental soundness. A Mason must have a sound mind, capable of reasoning, of instruction, of appreciating the beauties of our ritual, of expressing himself clearly, of discriminating between good and evil, the noble and the base. They must be educated men. This does not imply a university career or even a board school education. The best and truest and most serviceable education is often acquired among one's fellow men in the battle of life. That they must be able to read and write is obvious, but they must have been educated to possess the most valuable attributes of a gentleman. Not in the restricted and false sense in which my Lord Tomnoddy would apply the word. Polished manners and a good tailor neither make nor mar the gentleman. Masons understand by the term a man who has learned to be considerate to all men, of a kind and chivalrous nature, who avoids acts and words which pains his neighbors, honest in thought and deed, the support of the weak, the vindicator of the oppressed. Such a man, though his hands be horny, his boots clumsy, his gait heavy, and his H's misplaced, is a noble man, a friend to be trusted, and will make a good Mason. If in addition he possesses the grace and accomplishments of Lord Chesterfield or the erudition of Bacon, he will be doubly welcome. But the latter qualities, without the former, are as not. They must be of a charitable disposition, charitable in giving their superabundance, charitable in sympathy with the distressed in body and mind, charitable in thinking no evil of friend or foe, to virtue ever kind, to faults a little blind. Such should be the member of the craft. This is the ideal which every lodge should strive to attain, that in many cases we fall lamentably short of this high ideal, must be attributed to the imperfections of our human nature. found this last piece at www.masoneria-argentina.org.ar. It was originally in Spanish, and this is the website for the Grand Lodge of Argentina. And the original title was La Masonería, una institución esencialmente filosófica, filantrópica y progresista, which is in English, Masonry, an institution that is essentially philosophical, philanthropic, and progressive. First section is, it is philosophical because it guides men towards the rational investigation of the laws of nature, invites the effort of thought that goes from the symbolic geometric representation to metaphysical abstraction, seeks philosophical reflection, the penetration in a spiritual sense of the movement of history. It contemplates in each historical time new doctrinal inspirations and assimilates from each philosophical system, considers what the contribution to the heritage of abstract truth may mean beyond time and space. It is philanthropic. Because he practices altruism, he desires the welfare of all human beings and is not inspired by the pursuit of personal profits of any kind. Their efforts and their resources are dedicated to the progress and happiness of the human species, without distinction of nationality, races, sex, or religion, for which it tends to the elevation of the spirits and the tranquility of the consciences. Some apostles of the order have expressed in concise phrases the ecumenical spirit that animates Freemasonry. The whole human species is one scattered family on the face of the earth, and all people groups are brothers and must love one another as such. Woe to the ungodly who seek a cruel glory in the blood of their brother. It is progressive because it teaches and practices human solidarity and absolute freedom of conscience. Freemasonry has as its objective the search for truth, discarding fanaticism and approaching without prejudice all the new contributions of human invention. It studies universal morality and cultivates the sciences and the arts and does not put any obstacle in the way of investigation of the truth. Is Freemasonry a religion? Freemasonry is not affiliated with, nor can it affiliate with, any particular religion. Rising above all kinds of arguments, it offers lovers of truth the most appropriate ground for mutual intelligence and fraternal union. It does not recognize any scientific research, any authority superior to human reason, and rejects, therefore, the revealed truths accepted by the dogma of established religion. Admits into its bosom people of all religious creeds without distinction, provided they are tolerant and respect all the opinions sincerely professed. That is to say, free of fanaticism, selfishness, and superstitions. Is Freemasonry tolerant? Freemasonry is eminently tolerant and demands from its members the broadest understanding. All Freemasons, regardless of their country of origin and whatever right or religion they profess, constitute a single universal family because human brotherhood is one of their principles, and tolerance is chief among their obligations. In Freemasonry, there is a place for all free, honorable men of good manners, without distinction of race, religion, political and social ideas, professions, categories, and social position on the outside world. Here are some maxims of the Masonic Code. It loves all men as if they were your own brothers. Esteem the good, love the weak, flee from the bad, but do not hate anyone. Do not flatter your brother, because that is betrayal.
If your brother flatters you, beware lest he corrupts you. Always listen to the voice of your conscience. Avoid the quarrels, anticipate insults. Make sure that reason is always on your side. Do not be quick to anger, because anger rests in the bosom of the fool. The heart of the wise is where virtue is practiced, and the heart of fools where vanity is celebrated. If you have a son, rejoice, but tremble at the thought of the confidence he has deposited in you. Until he is 10 years old, may he admire you. Until 20, may he love you. Until you die, may he respect you. Until he is 10 years old, be his teacher. Until he is 20, his father, and until death, his friend. Plan to impart good principles rather than proper manners. May he learn from you clarity and integrity and not frivolous elegance. Make him an honest man rather than a skillful man. Read and enjoy, see and imitate, reflect and work. Always take good care of your brothers, and you yourself will reap the benefits. Be among the profane, free and open, great without being prideful, humble without being lowly, and among the brothers, firm without being tenacious, severe without being inflexible, and submissive without being servile. Speak moderately with the mighty, prudently with your equals, sincerely with your friends, sweetly with the little ones, and unreservedly with the poor. Fair and courageous, you will defend the oppressed. You will protect the innocent without expecting anything in return for the services that you lend. Accurately appraise men and things. You will only strive for personal merit, regardless of anyone's rank, status, and fortune. Thanks again for listening. Special thanks goes to Daniel Haynes for the intro and Ryan K. Haynes for providing soundtracks for this episode. You can find more information about Ryan K. Haynes and his music at ReverbNation.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, and Podbean. You can also find International Brotherhood of Freemasons podcast on YouTube, Facebook, Google+, Twitter, and at IBFpodcast.com, where you can support the show by clicking on either the Patreon button or the DonorBox.org button. Anyone who donates at least $1 a month or makes a one-time donation of $12 will get access to original articles, their translations, pictures, and hyperlinks. If you're able to make a monthly donation of at least $5 or a one-time donation of $60, you will receive a producer's packet in the mail as well. Please send in any comments or questions to podcastibf@gmail.com. Be sure to look for next month's episode wherever you heard today's episode. Until then, remember how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in harmony.